conversations. Thank you. We are now about to start the ALAC work session part one on Tuesday afternoon, the 8th of March, 2016. Luckily, I do know the date, even though the date just rolled off the screen. The first part of, thank you, I do have the date down, Pat. The first part of our session is with global stakeholder engagement. We've seen some of these people before. We're delighted to have them again. And I'm going to turn the microphone over to Sally, or the chair over to Sally Costerton to take us through whatever you have to take us through.
Thank you very much, Alan. Great to see you all. It already feels like we've been here for quite a long time. I don't know about you, but I feel like I've already seen quite a lot of you already several times, which is always a pleasure. So we're going to get cracking quickly. We're going to cover a couple of areas us sharing with you today, and I want to leave plenty of time for your questions and our always good discussion. So we're going to start off with Christopher Mondini here, in a slightly different role to the one you are used to him in, because he wears several hats. So as well as being our North America engagement head and our business engagement head, those of you who we've been met before will probably remember that about a year and a half ago, David Olive and I formed a coordination group bringing together all the departments that face the community to try and coordinate better, to streamline, and to kind of serve you better. And several of the guys in this room sit on this, including Heidi and also Christopher. And Heidi and Christopher have worked very closely on this project, which Christopher's going to share with you now, which we've called the Stakeholder Journey. And it's really our way of deepening and trying, hopefully, to start to get some solutions around this thorny problem of how do we help the community to refresh itself with new volunteers who really want to
المجتمعات مع متطوعين جدد لديهم إمكانيات للمشاركة في هذه العملية. سأعطي الكلمة الآن لكارول مانديني وبعد ذلك سأعطيك.
Need to keep this short, so if you could just do, when you do your section, if you could just present the overview and perhaps say a few words about the engagement centre, and then we'll go straight to questions. Oh, thank you, Christopher.
Hi, I'm going to speak from here. My name is Christopher Mondini. I am leading stakeholder engagement in North America. I also have a role on Sally's team doing outreach to global business. And as she said, we're doing some deep thinking about the future of our community and using the term stakeholder journey really as a framework, as a concept. It's not a project. It's not a lot of work or resource being put into anything at this stage. It's more of a way to gather our thoughts and look at work that's being done in various parts of the community. So, as Sally mentioned at the beginning, we really wanted to address a particular problem statement, and that problem statement is, how can ICANN get more volunteers and get more of those volunteers to become more meaningfully involved? And it arose from a number of, the origins were diverse, but more than a year ago, we had many leaders in the community telling us about volunteer burnout and the need to bring on new talent. We had been at the, really at the work of engagement and outreach as an ICANN team for a couple of years, and we had had some success in raising awareness about ICANN. But as you know, in your communities, converting that level of interest to active participation can be challenging. We also wanted to look very specifically at diverse SOs and ACs and the constituencies, structures, and the stakeholder group structures. Now, this challenge is not uncommon to other open stakeholder collaboration operations, open source communities. Even Wikipedia suffers from challenges of attracting newcomers. I'm going to go through very quickly, though, to just focus on a couple of points. One is, in our early analysis, we recognize that there are many what we call pain points about how hard it is to become acclimated to ICANN. It's the complexity of the work. Certainly for many people, time is a challenge, expense can be a challenge. Language and connectivity is always a challenge. There are knowledge requirements and skills that are needed, and we don't often always communicate those to potential new volunteers. And we have incumbents who can be intimidating, whether they know it or not, for the newcomers, and it can be just because they're reluctant to dive right in and discuss the topics. Now, I'm going to spend a little bit of time on this slide and a little bit of time on the slide of some high-level recommendations that we've come up with. I think we have a very problem-solving culture at ICANN. So when we introduce this topic, it's very common, and I think even with some of you, I've been involved in meetings where people immediately say, let's get to the whiteboard or the flip chart and write down what we think would be a good fix. And so there's a huge range of things that have emerged as ideas, everything from mentorship programs to membership management tools that the different structures can use, to subject matter salons where people can more safely discuss an ICANN topic but not feel like they're on the record or making policy. In the behavior and culture column, we have things like learning about succession planning, being more clear about what kind of skills are the right skills to be successful at ICANN, promoting more local participation or remote participation in a way that perhaps de-emphasizes people's feeling that they need to be at an ICANN meeting to be an ICANN volunteer. And structural issues sometimes related to how travel funding in the different community structures is allocated, finding ways for people who are maybe interested in following but don't want to be active can still call themselves members of the community, and so forth. So we just wanted to collect and try to put them into different categories. The categories are somewhat artificial, but I think it summarizes that as staff, we don't want to simply build tools and platforms at a rapid pace in a way that is such that the community isn't really leading us in the right direction or has the capacity or appetite to deploy them and not designed in conjunction with the community members. Some of it is behavior and culture, and it's reassuring to see academic studies that show that it's not just to us, that other open source collaboration organizations suffer from this. Really, it's almost an unconscious barrier that we can create because it's like we're another language or another planet onto ourselves. And then some of the structural issues, which are different from structure to structure across ICANN, I think they all need to be addressed together and in a very thoughtful way. So gathering some of the data and, again, socializing these ideas with a number of the community leaders, this joint policy and stakeholder engagement team have come up with some very high-level recommendations. The first is to continue our existing support. So whether that's migrating crop from a pilot program to something that's more permanent or giving it more flexibility, publishing newsletters as we do, and, you know, helping in an ad hoc way and in a formal way with your own outreach effors. The second recommendation, I think, is a really big one. And this is really largely informed by personal experience. In the stakeholder engagement team, I would begin by meeting people and asking them, what kind of person are you? Are you a user, an internet user? Are you passionate about consumer interests? Are you an intellectual property attorney? Are you a telephone company? And I would try to bring them to ICANN and introduce them to the right structure. And for whatever reason, often that structure was too busy or ill-equipped to sort of bring on board them. And in fact, rather than making them be attracted by structure, if we could ask them topical questions about what's important to you in what ICANN does, we have some tools that we can use to begin to go to market by topic, if you will. One is a list of all of the topics under discussion at ICANN at various stages of development, policy development. It's not in any way, shape, or form in easy-to-understand language. It's still very acronym-heavy, and I don't know if anybody saw the article in The Economist that came out where the first two lines talk about, it lists some of our sessions at this meeting in a way that's saying, if you were going to make fun of an organization that has a lot of abbreviations and acronyms, ICANN would be a good one to use. So we still have these lists of topics. We can convert them to plain language and then even further convert them to the kind of questions that really get to the heart of why a person becomes involved. But even once we do that, we need to find a way to bring them on board. So related to number two is the third one up there, which is stop trying to force people into a particular structure, but let them find out more easily where there are openings and opportunities to be in working groups, submit public comments on policy development processes, for example. Again, having under Sally's leadership, our team has really reached out and touched a lot of audiences. We've gathered people, we've held webinars. We now have a really robust list of contacts of people who have at least shown some interest in ICANN. So once we have better tools, we can go back and try to activate them. The fifth recommendation is really, again, something that we don't spend a lot of time. And every organization faces this challenge of succession planning, identifying the next generation of the high potential leaders, asking who will be sitting in our chairs in 5 years' time, in 10 years' time, and can we start looking at them now to give them the tools and make them feel part of a cohort that's moving up through the ranks. And again, this is really something that's greenfield. There's, to my knowledge, we haven't found any corners of our community that have tried to tackle this, but we would like to open it up for some discussion within the community. And then finally, as a team, ICANN has become much more operationally mature and robust in our systems. So we are now using stakeholder management Salesforce software. We're now able to look at click-throughs on newsletters. We're metrics on who hovers on what page of the web page, how many downloads of documents occur, and how many, which particular languages. And so we can begin to start to measure the points at which stakeholders become more engaged and go more deeply into the center of the organization. I'll finish on this slide, and it's really just a way that we're beginning to think about this journey and using data to measure who's at each stage of the journey. But it begins in the lower left with people who are completely unaware, who are outside those concentric circles. It runs through stages such as neophyte or learner, and all the way to the right it gets to leadership and people who are qualified ambassadors, and we don't quite have an alumni program or an emeritus program yet. But we have talented leadership and we have intake for newcomers, but that gap area is in the middle. So people who are just beginning to learn enough about the issue to sign up to co-chair a working group, or people who are just feeling confident enough to take the step to submit a public comment or to join an at-large structure or constituency group and become more active voices. So I think I'll pause there. It's a very high-level view of, again, I don't want people to think that this is a huge effort to reinvent anything. It's really an effort to gather input from the community, gather data, and be very data-driven by what will make our community sustainable, help us to continue to produce good policy outputs, and be very forward-thinking about how we consider our volunteers as a pool of talent to be attracted and developed. Thank you very much.
نظرا للوقت أود أن شخصا يأخذ بعض المذكرات بالنسبة للأسئلة وسوف نعود إليها فيما بعد. ما أود أن أقترحه أن نقوم بعمل فريقين و
very fast on ICANN readouts, ICANN meeting readouts, which a lot of people have asked for, so we felt that it would be helpful for you to get an update. Then we'll go straight to questions. So we've got a question over here. Is somebody capturing the... Yeah, you are. Great. Okay. Pierre.
Thank you very much, Sally, and thanks to all for having me here. I'll be quite quick because we don't have that much time, but anyway, we also... have ample opportunity to discuss the Africa strategy tomorrow, you know, and at 3:45 in the main room there. So I'll spend 2 minutes to actually maybe tell the story of, you know, our own Africa engagement. And our engagement is informed by the Africa strategy 3 years ago. And quickly, maybe after 3 years, we did have a few deliverables, and we certainly have come up with a few, I would say, questions and then recommendation. And of course, we would like to be hearing more on what you think about it. The issue in Africa is about, you know, strengthening participation of Africa in ICANN, and also make sure that ICANN be visible, you know, in Africa, because 3 to 4 years ago, ICANN hardly was known about on this continent of 1 billion population. And this strategy, one of the key objectives was to make sure that this really happens. So we were able to put to place a few what we might call flagship programs that will help us continue the that's definitely the only one page I would like to be, you know, discussing here. So the regional strategy has a few commitments. Like I said, it was about a framework for engaging with Africa and different two levels, you know, participate in ICANN, but also have ICANN in Africa. So today, so the strategy has been developed. It has even been reviewed, and of course, under the guidance of the African community itself. Some of the flagship programs, you know, the NSEC, for instance, you know, help us really sign the zone file for 5 to 6 countries today. We are also dealing with the DNS business entrepreneurship because we do believe that Africa needs to be part of this. There are different mechanisms that we put together to encourage people on that one, to sensitize people. That's great. We do have exchange program, but all of this is to beef capacity in Africa because that's what it's all boiled down to. I mean, develop capacity in Africa. We can say that after 3 years, well, we've seen some of those things, you know, happening. Of course, there's still a lot to be done. But definitely there is more visibility of ICANN today in Africa, and more Africans, you know, are coming up, you know, coming to ICANN meeting. Now, of course, there are some observations that we do have, one of them being that it's not just about participation. It's about, you know, really contributing to the work of ICANN. So the whole policy development process, for instance, still needs to be really explained, certainly, within Africa, so that people really be within the working groups, you know, and then understand the issues, for instance. This is something that is not really happening at the space that we have. Of course, we do have people, and then I was here this morning discussing again with some of you, and I was saying that certainly we need to clone people like Aziz and the rest because they are really contributing, really moving forward to what we are expecting. Let me really thank, you know, first at large for this effort that's here, meaning volunteerism. One of the issue I was also pointing out is, you know, the volunteerism from Africa, you know, it's quite important, and we've been insisting on that. And some of the recommendations that came up with what Chris had just, you know, suggested really For us, it's clear that you have to find ways in which you really encourage more and more people to volunteer, but also how you build kind of leadership, you know, in Africa. This is an issue. And, well, maybe briefly on this Africa Engagement Center, which is now coming as a good news, because then we are having an ICANN foothold in Africa. Well, it's certainly going to actually add to our engagement, you know, work in Africa. And we are now going to get into real institutional, you know, engagement with that center. Of course, some other operational, you know, things. So definitely I do believe that some of the recommendation really pertains to us in terms of our engagement in Africa. Of course, now we are facing issue of, you know, data collection, you know, on some of the things. So having tools available to actually collect the data and be able to, track the data and be able to inform this journey we started, I think is quite important. So these are some of the ideas that I have here. And I do believe that the journey, we are still on the journey, and certainly it's also high time that we stop to maybe assess, you know, some of the journey and build some of the conclusion to really even move forward. So briefly, that's what I would like to share and open for questions.
Thanks. You, Pierre. Yes, now we want to go to the readout session slides. So if you could just go forward through the deck, a few more slides. Yes, this one is perfect. Jarong.
Thank you. This is Jarong speaking. I'm the Vice President for Asia. We'll just skip a few more slides. It will trouble you to just go next a few more times. And to the slide where we have the Asia-Pacific Regional IGF. Okay, we'll just pause here. Before reading the slide, I'll just give a quick overview. The idea of being able to bring ICANN to the world, bring ICANN to the region, is what we need to be able to bring the diverse stakeholders for them to participate in ICANN. We all know that the door is open, but how do we bring people through that door is really through the collaborating from bottom up. So the idea of readouts is actually not entirely new, because the Japanese community has taken on this task themselves, attending ICANN meetings, and after that, after each ICANN meeting, taking the discussions from the ICANN meeting and translating key material, and then doing a readout session with their community. This model has been great, and we've tried to replicate this. So we've partnered the Japanese community, and since then, we've also been able to do readout sessions in Korea as well as in China. Now, this model is something we hope that we can share with the rest of the world, because we partner with stakeholders that actively participate, and they are really from the community, and they go back, they know what their community is interested in, they can share it in their local language. So from staff, we facilitate by providing them key information that they need. Also, we can give updates, and the community is really the one that is driving this. So taking this forward, we are also working very closely with AP Relo. The AP Relo leadership is very, very supportive, and we enjoy a very close partnership. We had a session a few days ago on ALAC and outreach, and there I remember we heard someone talk about that AP Relo leads the way in many things, and you know it's a model for the other Relos to follow. And this is another model that the other Relos could possibly look at, which is, we are going to have the Asia-Pacific Regional Internet Governance in Taiwan in July. And it times in pretty well with the B meeting that will happen in late June. And so after the B meeting, what can happen is we can do an ICANN readout at a regional forum at the Asia-Pacific Regional IGF, and we can work with the AP Relo leadership to have AP Relo and at large do the ICANN readout and share their takeaways of it. So this is a very exciting initiative. From staff, we put in the workshop with the session details on this slide, and we're hoping to do the readout. Hopefully, it will get accepted, and then we'll take things from there. I'm quite confident it will. We have been part of the Asia-Pacific Regional IGF for some time. So hopefully this will go through, and once we can carry this out, we'll share our experience from it with the rest of ALAC, and hopefully we can use this as a model to share with the rest of the world. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have a queue, and I put myself in the queue to ask a question related to the ALAC in general and not on any of the subjects, but after that we have a queue. And so far we have Garth, Vonda, I'm back in the queue on one of the subjects you raised, and Sandra. Have I missed anyone? All right, then. My question is a very simple one. I'm not even sure it's a question. It's an observation. As we were going through the special budget requests, and we did a very diligent job this year, I believe, there was a recurrent theme. We kept on coming upon requests saying this is a really good thing. It's not really an ALAC thing, but shouldn't GSE be funding this? And the question is, do we have a good mechanism for addressing those? In general, what we did is submitted it as an ALAC request with either note in the request saying we believe this is something that is more in GSE's line, or in some cases perhaps Heidi gave that message privately. But it seems to be a very recurrent theme, and we need some more formal way perhaps of people funding their request directly to GSE instead of going through the guise of its special budget request time. Let's put the piece of paper in. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. I gather we... Jerome, did you want to... What did you say, Heidi?
I think, Jerome, did you want to respond to some of these?
Hi, it's Chris Mondini again. I had the good fortune of reviewing with the sort of a cross-disciplinary team some of these special budget requests, and there were indeed some... And it's we're very grateful because, of course, you're in the communities and you can identify what's happening in various parts of the world that would be useful for advancing ICANN's mission and work. But there were a few where we were sort of a no-brainer, where we said, oh, let's just hand that to Jarong in Asia Pacific to work directly with Aparalo to make it happen. And so in answer to your comment, Alan, I would in the regions, we on the stakeholder engagement team as regional vice presidents, some of us are very thinly spread across very large regions, but we are very open to just a direct discussion about, hey, this would be a good place for ICANN to be. It may be the kind of thing that it takes a year of budgeting ahead to be there at the next iteration, but please encourage everyone to contact our team.
I think as a follow-on, we need to set up some process to do it. And I'm not talking about 17 formal committees and a formal call for proposals, but we need to set up something informal so that we can address these kind of things as they come up.
Thank you, Alan. If I may just quickly add, I think we have a good relationship with AP Relo, and I get the requests and I get to see them very well. And we can also, we have interactions where we can look at how to scope and target the engagement better, which is exactly as you mentioned, having that direct interaction. I think the second thing I would like to note is just that when the requests are made in a transparent manner, it is good because the community will know from what the AP Relo is doing, rather than reaching out to GSE on the side, which is good. But I'm thinking of maybe the transparent process is good. But as you mentioned, I agree with you completely. If there is a process that can be ironed out for this, it would be great.
I mean, maybe we need to do it on the same cycle and publicly, but coordinated better, because right now it's a little bit haphazard. My speaker's list at this point is Garth first.
Thank you, Garth Bruin, ALAC. I have an off-topic item, and I just wanted to say that when we were stranded at the airport in Casablanca, Chris was actually very proactive in moving the crowd through the airport and getting us on buses, and he should be recognized for that. Thank you.
A new vocation. Jean-Jacques wanted to say something. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Alan. Just to follow up on the question about coordination, just to remind people, especially those in this room who associate themselves with civil society, if we can accept this term, that as part of the civil society engagement, we have we're hoping to have monthly calls with the community, working sessions, and we have a working session actually face to face this Thursday at 12 to try and coordinate better amongst the civil society communities within ICANN for exactly these purposes, try to flag up events that we're all doing. So very much going to the point that you were making about coordination. So there are some vehicles. So I hope that many of you will join these calls and join the meeting on Thursday, where we would like to very much coordinate on content being produced, coordinate on events coming up, and finding synergies. Thank you.
Thank you. Is that a hand?
I've lost my name.
I will add you to the list. Next we have Vanda.
Yeah, well, I address something just a little bit about what happened this morning was exactly what you address, Christian, in this slides. Because the people that we talked this morning mostly needs to find out a way to get engaged but not really fit into any of those our, you know, fibers that we have. So it's something that I have the chance to address that they can start to participate in, but most of the time participation is through weeks. And they do not know how to enter into the week, how to participate in the. So there was a lot of question with the answer is not, you know, easily for someone to find out that is not involved already in the process. So just a feedback from the stand-up today.
Just for the record, for those of us who weren't at whatever meeting you're talking about, can you tell us what meeting that was?
Yeah, well, we were invited to join 8 of morning today and to the stand-up in the Andalus group, you know, Jardin over there. And it was for the people that needs to find a way to fit in inside ICANN. So it was quite interesting, but a lot of questions that the answer it's not read for them in the website.
Thank you.
May I comment on that for 2 minutes?
Christopher can make a comment if he can do it in 30 seconds.
So, yes, it's called the Sector Stand-Up, and it's actually an add-on to the Newcomer Day where we put a sign in four corners and say, are you technical, are you users, are you governments, are you business? And then everyone can go, and newcomers meet each other so they feel they're part of a cohort. And I'd love to follow up with you, Vanda, on your other topic because I think there might be some ideas surfaced in the work that will address it. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm next in the queue, and a question for Jean-Jacques, who has disappeared. Oh, you're there. Okay. Just wanted to point out, in regard to this. Pardon me. No, I was actually next in the queue. I'm managing the queue. No. I really did put my name there before Sandra. If I didn't call my name out when I listened to the queue before, my apologies. You can come look at the list.
But you have been the first already.
Okay. Then I'll put myself at the end of the queue. Sandra.
Thank you, Ellen, but we have to be strict at some point. It's Sandra speaking. Can we please go back to slide 14, which I found personally very interesting? I think this is a very good observation, and it somehow reminds me on that image which was also produced in the ICANN Academy Working Group, with these terms, ambassador and newcomer and so on and so forth. Still, I think to be complete, you are missing one important point at the moment, and you have to include staff here, because in this ICANN lifestyle cycle, people are going from community members to be a staff member, going back to the community, and so on and so forth. And I think if you do a research or if you want to take this into consideration, then you have to include this in the circle. And at the moment, it's a half circle. I believe it should be a round circle, but however, I really like how you translate the ICANN community, but please include the staff here.
Sirenush.
Thank you, Chair. First, Sirenush Vardanyan, for the record. I would like to comment on this today's morning session stand-up. I think that it was some complication and maybe lessons learned for us, because at the same time there was session for fellows, newcomers, and next-gen. So to do this similar session at the time when they are involved in other sessions, it was not useful. So maybe next time we can do it right in a place where they have their sessions, and these are people who are interested to learn more. So yeah, this is my observation from today. And going back to readout sessions, we will of course put into action this innovation in Taipei this year. We'll see how it worked, but we can also bring this on local level, on national level. Like the suggestion for me, I can see that this can be at our next Armenian IGF, one readout session related to AP Rallo activities. There are three ALSs based in Armenia, so why not three of us can sit and do a presentation on different activities on national, regional, and global level. So that might be a good opportunity also for outreach. And I'm sure that staff will be helpful with the documents to as handouts to be shared with the local community there. That much. Thank you.
Maureen.
Of course.
With or without the rose, Maureen.
I just wanted to raise going back to the funding issue. One of the things that I just wondered if there might be some sort of mechanism before the FBSC, for example, that where our strategic plan is costed, because that's basically what we did. We put through the costings for each of the activities, and then we got to the FBSC and they said, now put that into crop, put that into GSE, put this, you know, we might be able to do this through ICANN. So that, you know, like really FBSC did that and it actually extended that whole process, that perhaps we need to have something that goes before that, including, you know, APAC and everyone that might be involved in crop and I don't know. I'm just making a suggestion.
Certainly, there's nothing sacred about the process we're following. In terms of the timing, we've sort of done it as soon as we had any information. We could easily start a cycle earlier and do a first pass way before that if people were actually willing to contribute things.
I just wanted to add that it's just that I felt that we sort of like copped a lot of flack when we put in all our things and says no, we don't like that one at all. You know, it would have been nice to have been topped beforehand.
We had a pre-meeting to specifically decide to target Asia Pacific, though. That was a joke. We didn't have a meeting and we didn't make that decision. Yes, certainly, Sally.
Thank you, Maureen. And I think there are several things have come up on this, and I can see from the agenda that you have a session with Rob Hogarth after this. So two things. One is I would encourage you, Rob and my RVPs work really closely together. So don't feel like you have to treat that as a kind of separate discussion. you know, Chris and Rob sit on a steering group to sign up. So there's a lot of shared understanding of this, and hopefully that makes it faster and better and more streamlined for you. So I just want to make sure everybody does know that's how we handle it in the staff. The second thing is, I agree with you, Maureen. Look, I think a perfect world would be that the work is done ahead of time in the regional strategies, which are being facilitated by, in your case, Save, but in other, depending on where you are in the world, and that as early on in the process as possible, Save or Chris or Pierre is able to look at the different packages of work and identify the most likely place where either the capacity exists to do it, it already that can be allocated to it, or where we may need some program dollars and programs where we may be able to get them from. And so I think we're getting much better. But there, in my mind, there shouldn't. If the coordination is good at the point at which the program is developed, we should be able to do that and to facilitate that. So, please keep talking to us about that if we can continue to make improvements, because there's always more we can do. But I think it's better than it was. But you know, there's still a way to go.
Ariel.
This is Ariel. For the record, this is a comment from a remote participant, Ratme Sitariel. A strategy to develop the future leadership is framed as a cross-cutting the concept of e-learning for life, especially for members of Africa and Latin America and the Caribbean.
Okay, no comment. Seeing no one else, I'll ask a question. The stakeholder journey is interesting because a lot of it focuses on helping people decide where they fit. The recent initiative on civil society seems to be orthogonal to that. That is, we're introducing a term which many people do relate to outside of ICANN, and it maps to multiple areas within ICANN, and therefore seems to be increasing the confusion or potentially for those particular people. Not decreasing it. Comment?
Jean-Jacques Sahel, ICANN for the record. Thank you, Alan. And obviously, I've heard this from several people, including you, before. I've answered. I think the civil society engagement strategy doesn't look inward, it looks outside, and outside there's a lot of communities that describe themselves as civil society. So I think that's how we look at it. However, very much taking the feedback you gave us into account, and others have given us, at our working session on Thursday, we will actually start with an agenda item. So we've got, I think, an hour and a half, and the first half hour is dedicated to a single agenda item, which is to discuss the definition and scope of civil society. And we actually have the benefit of having Jan Schulter, the academic, who you will remember from the CCWG accountability, who has written extensively on the topic, to moderate the discussion. And there's no predefined outcome. It's really to exchange on whether it's a term that we like within ICANN or not, whether there's a better term we can use. And more importantly, perhaps for me, understand who we're talking about within this. What is the scope? My understanding, looking back at a number of documents over the years, even all the way back to the 1998 statement of policy by the US administration, which I was reading for my bedtime recently, there is this understanding that ICANN is very much about end users, so at large is very much there, but also non-profit, non-commercial, and academia. So to me, that's broadly the groups that fit under civil society, but that's just to me, and I'm really keen to have that discussion amongst us. And I think we should just look at it constructively. The idea is to look outside to audiences, to people, the stakeholders that could potentially be interested in ICANN, and try to address them in their language, so to speak. So we will be addressing that with your support starting from Thursday. I don't think it'll be the last discussion on the topic, but thank you.
We have 5 more minutes. Nothing else? I have an observation to make then. We're talking about the concept of who will be sitting in this seat 5 and 10 years from now. I used to be very heavily involved in another organization, and I haven't been actively involved probably in a long time now, a very long time. But I still periodically go to their website and, you know, who's president this year? And looking at the series of senior leaders in the organization after the time I left. And it's quite interesting. There are people who at the time when I left, if you would ask me or many of our colleagues, are they a good candidate for president 5 or 6 years from now, there would have been laughter. But 7 years later, they were president. And it's a combination of people evolving and perhaps last person standing, of the only one around who has some perspective. So I'm not sure how well one can have that discussion. To identify potential candidates, yes. On the other hand, you may be excluding the people who, as the world changes, will mature into positions that you wouldn't have considered them for at all. So it's I wouldn't want to have things too locked in steel. Thank you. Anything else? Jean-Jacques has a comment.
Thank you, Jean-Jacques Salle. I can, then I'll just say I have been chair of the UK chapter of the International Institute of Communications for over 6 years now. If anyone is interested, please talk to me.
Sally, over to you.
Sally Costerton for the record. And to put on the record, very officially, my continuing thanks to this group and to all your members, to the ALSs, to everybody that comes into ICANN through and under your guidance. You are, as you remind us, and you're very right to remind us, you know, the feet of ICANN, the bottom of the bottom-up process. And, you know, we are dedicating as much time as we possibly can, both regionally and sort of more centrally, to both trying to solve very tactical local issues on the ground, trying to make sure there are enough resources available, they're balanced evenly around the world, but also starting to try and do some of the heavy lifting of trying to get into some of these long, big existential problems that face ICANN. Because we recognise that we get paid to do this, and we're not volunteers. And I take out that responsibility very seriously. We have a big duty of care to make sure that the salaries of the people that are on the staff side are put to the very best purpose of trying to do everything we can to move the ball forward on some of these very difficult subjects, and appreciating, if you are a volunteer, that it can be very frustrating to see the same issues come round and round and round and never really feel a sense there's quite enough time and quite enough resource to really move them forward. So the more we can do to help you together that we do that, and thank you, Sandra, for pointing out that the staff are in this too, and they really are. We want the same things. We're here really for the same reasons, and we have different roles to fulfill. So please do keep inviting us to these sessions. Thank you for being so indulgent with us on time. We really appreciate it. I'm very happy to see that we had three times as much time as Xavier. This makes me feel good. I don't really mean that. And we're here, as they say, all week. So we look forward to seeing you more during the week. And thank you again for your great discussion today.
Thank you. Our next speakers are not quite here yet, I'm told, so we will, again, singing, dancing? Anyone? We can always rely on Cyrenish. Do we know if they're due soon, or should we go on to something else?
Thank you.
Sorry. For once, you guys are on time.
I know, because we gave them more time, you see. That's why. Okay, so you're going to speak about the fiscal year budget. Again, one point to suggest is that they have comments about the fiscal year special request. Put it into the current public comment on the fiscal year 17 overall budget.
No.
So that's what I'm hearing from your team.
No.
I have heard
that's
that.
Not what you're hearing.
Additional budget request process.
We're going to show our website. At some point, I will want you to go there, to be there on that page, and you should put in on the blue jeans and move the plate. And then, yeah, like that. And then we're going to go to public comments. We have an understanding. And then we're going to scroll down so that everyone can see where the budget is on the end of the FY17 budget. And I'll drive you to open up one file, and then we'll go through that one file. So if you scroll down.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're just about ready to resume. If you could take your seats, please.
So this session goes until 15:40. Okay, so you have pretty good time.
Okay. Except we are starting late at this point. Okay. Are they close to ready?
But then coach Ariel to go to the right information, to the right file. Right.
Taryn, or Rob, you want to sit up here?
Okay.
In some cases, yes. In other cases, no.
Am I waiting for Heidi to start or no?
to start. Alan.
Are we ready?
Apparently we're ready, and I was looking in the wrong place. The work session number one on Tuesday afternoon will resume. We have Mr. Calvez and Mr. Hogarth, who will be enlightening us on the budget process, how much money you're giving us at the exclusion to all other ACs and SOs,
it's
and so
Darren
forth.
Presley who's going to answer that question over there.
Ah, sorry, someone I haven't met. Welcome all, and I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. Darren is our Senior Manager of Financial Planning and Analysis. That's a long title, but in short, she's the person who really manages the entire budget process from a finance team's perspective. So she's the one who does the work, and I look good as a result. We would like to quickly give you an update as to what we have currently published very recently on Saturday morning at 6 a.m. Marrakesh time, so that you know where to find the FY17 operating plan and budget that's just been submitted for public comment. And then I would just want to make sure we give ourselves the opportunity to go over any questions that you may have either on that specific part of the budget or on the additional budget request process or on any other aspects of the budget process or any other aspect of finance for that matter. So I asked Ariel to pull up the web page. So we were just on the home page of ICANN. You know how to go to the public comment page of the website. And in the open public comment section, we scrolling down, we have the draft ICANN FY17 operating plan and budget and 5-year operating plan update. On that point, you remember that last year the board approved the 5-year operating plan of ICANN. The 5 years were FY16 to FY20. So for the FY17 operating plan and budget, we have also updated the 5-year operating plan. Year one of the operating plan is this current year we're in, FY16. Year two of the operating plan is the year that we're budgeting for in FY17. So we have updated the year one to reflect the most current expectation of accomplishments at the end of year one, which is FY16. And then we've adjusted FY17 to take into account this progress and potential changes coming from year one. And then we've adjusted, if required, year 3, 4, and 5 of that operating plan. So now we have an updated 5-year operating plan that is submitted for comment as well. That's one of the documents that we have. Ariel, can you scroll down, please, further? Thank you. So you can find here the draft 5-year operating plan that I just spoke about. Come back. We're not going to go into it now. We're going to go over the budget first. Sorry. Thank you. And then the second document is the draft FY17 operating plan and budget. So 5 years, 1 year, the year two of the 5 years is right here, the FY17 operating plan and budget. Can you go into that? We won't go over the entire document because we have only 4 hours in front of us to do that. But I will simply scan through quickly the content so that you can see what is in there, and then you will be able to go towards the information that is of most interest to you as part of this document. The first 6 sections are overviews of the budget. We have an overview of the ICANN operations. This is the ongoing work of ICANN, where we display the revenue and the assumptions that we have made to forecast our revenue. We talk about what our expenses contain at a high level, including multi-year projects. We show a certain number of risks and opportunities as part of our plan. We then have an entire section on the IANA stewardship transition and implementation project. So here we talk about what is currently included in the activities that the project contains for finishing the transition, starting the implementation, and completing the implementation. We also offer an overview of the future structure of the PTI that's submitted for comment as well as part of the implementation plan. There was a presentation yesterday morning on that topic. And we provide also in that section the breakdown of the IANA functions costs, so the total costs of the IANA functions, and then how they break down into the three operational communities. Names, numbers, protocol parameters. So this is where we say, for example, that the IANA costs, the IANA functions cost for ICANN is 8.5 million. That's where you're going to find that. The next section is the new GTLD program, an overview of the new GTLD program financial information. And the section six is adding together the ICANN operations and the new GTLD program to have the complete view of the ICANN financials. Those are the two components. The section seven is 40 pages long, more or less, and it is the detailed operating plan. So it's the description of the activities of ICANN as per the structure of the strategic plan, therefore by objectives, goals, portfolio, we describe all the activities of ICANN. We have about 55 portfolios that comprise basically the entire activities of ICANN. Can we scroll to the first page, please? Go further up. Continue further. I'll show the first page so that we can see what it contains. Further up. Go to section 7. Further up. Go down a bit more. A bit more. Okay, thank you. So this is for the objective number one. Evolve and further globalize ICANN. We have then four goals in that objective. So for the first goal, which is this one, further globalize and regionalize ICANN functions, we have three portfolios. Each portfolio is then described here. And go to the next page. The third portfolio is described here. And then we provide for each of those three portfolios the costs associated with each of those portfolios, broken out between personnel costs, travel and meetings, professional services, admin, and capital. We also indicate the number of FTEs, so full-time equivalent. So it's the time of the people who contribute to that portfolio. Sometimes it could be fractions of time, right? It could be 20% of the time of one person and 50% of the time of another person. So all that is indicated for each portfolio. We have also, as part of this document, an appendix that then breaks down each portfolio by project. So then we go from 55 portfolios to over 300 projects. And for each project, we have the same information. And that's in the appendix. It's just too big to put into the Word document. And this is in an appendix that we provide also in an Excel format to be able to be used and to use the data that is included in there. So that's the information that we have in the budget. I think we have 75 pages in that document. the 5-year operating plan is how many pages? 50? Something like that. So it's a lot of information. The public comment period has started on the 5th. It will last until the end of April, 30 April. That's 56 days. It's a lot of information. The more we can take time to review it, the better, of course, for all of you. 56 days is the most that we have managed to dedicate to that public comment process on the budget ever. It's also the earliest we have ever published it. Right? It's 2 weeks earlier than last year. It's 9 weeks earlier than the year before. And it's also the most information that we've ever published, because last year we had all the breakdown by project, but we have also inserted this year a substantial amount of information on the INF functions costs. Any questions at this stage? Holly, you can't speak with a rose. Well, you can try, but...
Sorry, Heidi. It's going to be a lot of material. Do you have areas where you would suggest we particularly pay attention and formulate some comments, or are you hoping that we just kind of skip the parties and read?
Good question. So I think that... I think that this group could provide a lot of value by commenting on the areas of the strategic plan that most interest you. So, and this is the section 7. This is looking at the objectives and the portfolios and even the projects that support the work of ICANN for a given purpose. Is what we do what we should be doing? Is it sufficient? Is it unclear? And I would suggest you focus on the section 7 and that you scan through the strategic objectives of the organization to look at those that are most interest to you, and then look at those portfolios that are there and drill down on those. And maybe even look at the projects list to say, does that make sense? Why isn't there more? Why isn't there something different? Why are we doing this? Which would be very substantive comments and would be very useful. I would love comments on our revenue assumptions. But maybe it's not that much of interest to you, or maybe you don't have a lot of knowledge about that part of the market, and that's fine. And we have had so far very good discussions with the registries and registrars, community members, about our revenue assumptions. So they've provided a lot of input. But maybe that's not something that's much of interest to you guys, and that's completely fine. That's how we get a lot of varied input, because we have different people interested in different things. So that's perfectly fine. And then I would let you focus a little bit on that section of the plan. I'm just offering that as an idea. Yep. Susanna, please. Susanna just joined us.
Hi, this is Susanna Bennett. May I add that on the 5-year operating plan, the team had inserted a session called Summary of Changes. Since that is an update to the first version of 5-year operating plan that we published last year, so that a few pages on the summary changes can be very helpful for you to take a look at, and if any of the changes that any of you interested in, then you can drill down deeper. Okay, thanks.
Yes, thank you. In the 5-year operating plan, that first section that we have would help you as well focus on just what's changed out of the 5-year operating plan so that you can focus on that as well. That's just making things easier.
Just to note, we have 15 minutes left in the session.
Okay. Drill down further down a little bit. Further. A bit more. I'll stop you when relevant. Yeah, it starts here. Summary of changes. we highlight three topics that are probably the most significant changes out of the plan. And then there's a table that then shows by objective number one, but then by goal number two, the changes that have occurred. So that in two pages, you have the substance of the changes. Then if you want to go into a specific goal, then it makes it easier. Thank you. I'm really happy at this stage, Alan, to open it up for questions, and we can drill on any aspect of the budget. And I know this group usually is interested also in the additional SO and AC budget request process and those requests. So if there's any questions on where we are now, there's someone who has a question already.
But not yet.
Rob,
did you have anything you wanted to present, or are you here just for questions? Okay. In that case, Judith, go ahead.
So, yes, this is Judith Hellestein for the record. We did, in fact, submit a special budget request, and it would be great if you could give us a highlight of when that request would be looked at. It's an extension of the current one that we're doing now for our captioning pilot.
Thank you. So the requests were submitted by February 15th. That's the deadline for everyone. And from that point on, the team internally has gathered all those requests and started analyzing them. And we are now in the process of evaluating those requests against the criteria that are set to evaluate requests, which are on the community wiki. So that you can look at those criteria. And we're planning to finalize that review by the end of March. I'm looking at Rob and Taryn at the same time. By the end of March, right? And from that point on, we will submit for review by the Board Finance Committee the suggested answer to the requests. What the Finance Committee does, they're not necessarily looking in the depth of each request. They just want to understand that we follow the process of receiving the submissions, adequately reviewing the requests, and adequately answering the requests, whether it's yes or no, to explain that why we think it should be a yes or why we think it should be a no. So the Board Finance Committee does a little bit of a quality control review of the process in order then to determine, and then, of course, they look at, are we recommending an amount of requests that it creates expenses that we can afford? So that's another aspect, of course, that the Finance Committee looks at. And then they make the recommendation to the board to approve those requests. We're expecting this to happen normally by the end of April. It may, depending upon the board calendar, happen early May, depending upon whether the board has a board meeting at the end of April or not. So that's the next steps, basically. Does that answer your question, or do you have more in mind?
I guess that helps the answer to the question. Is originally it was a follow-on request for our pilot, but our pilot got started very late and was still in the midst of the pilot, so we don't have the desired metrics that we would have when we submitted, when it was your intention.
And so because you're thinking about that new request that follows that current work is what you're saying. Okay, understood. And we'll hopefully we can take that into account in the evaluation of the request. Not presuming what the evaluation will be, I think that if a pilot has not finished, I mean, we would want to try to get to the end of it, right, to be able to finish the pilot. So if there's more funding that's required for that, ideally we would be able to offer it. Any other questions on the SONAC additional budget request process?
We have Sirenush.
Thank you, Chair. Yes. Sirenush Vardanyan for the record. And thank you, Xavier, for really substantial document and the information. For me, it's new
to find out this that this is really available at this stage. So thank you very much for this work and to your team. Coming back to the requests, I don't want to specify any specific request, though AP Rallo submitted 5 requests, and we submitted also substantial follow-up information as well to some kind of explain why those requests had been done. And the feedback to some of those were that they fit into GSC activities like outreach, etc. And just my question is if this is not going to be approved by finance team and with the idea that it should go to GSC team, does it envisage that GSC budget should be increased with that amount to fit into those requests, or it's just if it goes there, then separate discussion should take place with GSC to find out if this actually fit into their annual strategy or no? Okay. I don't know if I explained it properly.
I think you did. I'll start and I'll let Rob finish the answer to that question. So a request may be granted that then will trigger an activity to be carried out and organized by a department. So what I mean by that, for example, is that if you make a request for an outreach activity in Pakistan, for example, and the request's evaluation leads to, yes, let's do that. Okay. What's going to happen is that we're going to try to identify in the staff the person who can help organize that activity. If it's outreach, it's most likely going to be someone in GSC, right? And in GSC Asia-Pacific, likely, and it's the team of Jarong and someone who will try to help. Maybe Samiran will help organize this, and he's going to be the contact person to organize the outreach event. So from a purely financial standpoint, what we do then is that though the bucket of requests is approved all in one go, like the 500,000 or 600,000 requests will all be approved in one go, then once it's been approved, we're gonna put that request and that activity into the GSC Asia Pacific's budget for implementation, basically. And those funds can be, if reach, it's probably a certain amount of travel support, maybe renting a meeting room you see what I'm saying? So those costs will then be placed into the department who will support that activity to occur.
So if you approve, then the idea will be approved and the details will be discussed already with the department.
Correct.
Thank
but,
you.
But the request is approved on the basis of understanding what it is, what activity it carries out, and therefore how it will be implemented. So then, if we say the outreach activity is a one-day seminar into a hotel in Lahore, then and we're expecting 40 participants. We're expecting that we're going to need 3 community members to organize to present the webinar. So we're going to have travel funding for 3 persons and maybe 1 or 2 staff to support. We're going to have the rent of the renting of the room for 40 people for 1 day. We're going to have the catering, the coffee, and so on. All those costs evaluated and then put into the budget to make that happen, and that's how the activity is carried out. Make sense?
Chair, can I just have a follow-up? In some cases, we have to... So, Siranush Vardanyan, for the record. Yes, thank you for the explanation. It's pretty clear and understandable and acceptable. just follow-up question. So we have challenges to come up with the prices, to put the prices there. So it's not our responsibility.
Correct.
It's not the way how we can come up, yeah? Because, for example, if there is a 1-day event in Pakistan, we cannot know the prices actually in Pakistan. Yeah. So you are coming up with the allocation of amount. That is it clear understanding?
Absolutely. So
okay,
what matters is what is the activity and how do we evaluate it against the criteria and so on. Ideally, with a good understanding of what the activity is about, then we can do a reasonable estimate of the costs. And that's why we've had this conversation this morning with NPOC. Rudy was explaining, sometimes it's not very clear that we have a request that's granted, but there's no amount in front of it. So with what I explained earlier with the GSC activity that's then put into the GSC department, we estimate, with your help in describing the activity, what we think the costs are going to be. When you know, you put it. When you don't know, we do it. The bottom line is we're trying to estimate what the impact is going to be. Yeah. And that's what we put in there. Then after that, like...
Xavier, if I may interrupt,
yeah.
We have 5 people in the queue and 4 minutes okay. left in the session. So I think we need to move ahead. Perhaps okay. a separate conversation between you and
Thank
Sarah.
You, Thank Xavier. You. It's clear, completely clear.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry, may I make a quick point of clarification? Is that okay? Quickly. I thought I heard that finance approves the request, and I just wanted to clarify it's not finance that approves the request. It's actually an assessments team and a recommendations team that are comprised of policy, GSE, and finance. So just wanted to clarify that. Thank you. This is Taryn Presley for the record.
Thank you.
Thank you. And can we keep interventions to 1 minute, please? Alberto's next.
I'm going to speak in representation of Alberto because Alberto, he's going to use a translation.
Ah. Okay. Thank you. Alberto Soto.
This is Alberto Soto. Lacralo had a project for Panama, which was suspended. Will that process go directly to FY16? Do we have to submit another request, or does it go directly into next year's? Thank you.
Okay, so the question was in Spanish. I listened to it in French. I'm going to respond in English, I think. If I can. No, don't be sorry. That's perfectly fine. I think I'm going to respond in English because otherwise it's going to take me more time than I have to respond. So your question was about the fact that some requests have been made for activities that were specific to the fact that we would have a meeting in Panama, Panama City, which has been canceled. But that was an FY16 activity, right? Okay, so I think that's a bit of an exception and an unusual event. I think that if a request was approved for an activity that was happening in Panama City, and that activity can also happen in the new meeting place, then I would say it's just going to happen, and it should happen. But I'm suspecting that what you're pointing out is for an activity that was very specific to the fact that we were in Latin America, right? So so I'm suspecting then that that activity is not going to occur because it's just not going to make sense to do. So as a result of that, it's simply not going to happen. When we have next a meeting in the region where if that activity then makes sense, then yes, it should be resubmitted because then it will be different time, maybe different location. Maybe you guys will have a different idea as to what you want to do. So, yes, but we... I agree that it may be 3 years, except that there may be other changes in the schedule of meetings that are driven by circumstances that we don't necessarily control, and maybe we'll go back to Latin America, Caribbean earlier than those 3 years. But yes, in that case, there's not really a great way to handle this. Whenever there's a meeting in Latin America or Caribbean, then a new request will need to be submitted. Then we can look at it on its own merit then. Sorry.
Thank you. I will observe we don't always get a full budget cycle notice of where we're going to meet.
So Nick Tommaso, who handles meetings, is working on that. Yeah. By the next 48 hours, we may have more than 2 years visibility, because he's submitting 6 decisions to the board.
Indeed,
over the next.
I was just pointing out that when a change is made suddenly, we may end up in a region we didn't know we were going to be in that fiscal year.
I completely understand.
Just to note.
I completely agree.
No answer needed.
Yep. Thank you.
I'm next on the queue for an observation. I don't want an answer.
Okay.
We carefully tried to adhere to the principles we were given, including the one saying no travel to ICANN meetings. We note other groups did not adhere to that principle. We eagerly await to see how they will be treated. Thank you. The next I have on the speaker is Shun.
Thank you. This is Shun. A quick one. You mentioned that the Excel versions are on the websites, and maybe I could follow up with you offline to, because I didn't see it on the site. The other question is in relation to the budgeting structure, considering that it is 2016-2017, and in between that, there will be some new organization, subsidiary, for instance, the PTI and so on and so forth. How is the budget actually putting those realities into concern?
Okay, so just to answer your first comment, though, on the web page, on the public comment web page, in the section 3, you have the FY17 projects by project, and in PDF, by portfolio in PDF. So this is like several pages. This is 2 pages. And then you have an Excel spreadsheet that has both, all of that information in it. So it's where you can find it. So in section 3, the second part of the documents. You were taking the example of the PTI, for example. So in the FY17 budget draft that is offered here to public for public comment, section 4, you will see what we are suggesting to do about the PTI and the budget of the INF functions and the breakdown of that budget by names, numbers, and protocol parameter. So it's in it. We are assuming in this draft that it occurs, that the proposals will be approved, and that they will be implemented as such. That answers your question. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Humberto. By the way, our next speakers have not arrived yet, so we do have a few more minutes if you can stay with us. Humberto, that was canceled. Next, we have Judith.
Yes, this is Judith Hellestein for the record. My question is also related to on the wiki, there are certain categories of what is included in a special budget request, and they often say that do not include requests that can be funded under the crop program or other types of travel and outreach. And we notice that a lot of other groups, in Arala, we try to follow the rules in there, but we notice a lot of other groups do not. And I'm wondering, what is the criteria only for some groups, or is that a guide, or often does it happen and they just do anything? So we're not, should be not following the,
Okay, so no, the guidelines are for everyone. They're not for a specific group, and others are treated differently. That would be entirely unfair. The guidelines are for everyone. We try to apply the guidelines unless there's an overwhelming reason why these guidelines cannot be applied. But in the example that you're mentioning, I think that we would want to apply the guidelines completely normally. So I don't know if, Rob, you want to speak about the more specific point, but the guidelines are applicable to everyone in the same fashion. And unless, again, there's an exception, which I can't imagine right now, but there could be, then we would apply those guidelines to everyone.
Thank you, Xavier. This is Rob. A couple quick points. I'll address Judith's and then just give you one other overall perspective of this project. First is that, yes, we are continuing to try to rely on the crop for many different requests. One of the reasons for... I'm going to speak slower. One of the reasons for creating the crop originally was because we've got such a variety of requests from different communities. That doesn't mean that some folks don't occasionally try to push the envelope. Some actually come up with some very great ideas that have a travel component to them. And I would note that some of them that came from ALAC do have that. So there's that dynamic, and as Xavier says, the assessment team makes a great effort to look at those, see if they're unique, see how they can be applied more broadly. One last thing, just to give you all some perspective that Xavier might not have right in front of him. We had 59 requests from various community groups, for those of you who've looked at the wiki. We've also done the calculations on an initial level, and approximately $1.5 million worth of requests. I believe if you look at Xavier's budget document, there's a much smaller envelope to accommodate those various requests. And although we don't look at dollars specifically, Xavier has cautioned the staff to look at resources as opposed to specific dollar amounts, that does come into play. And so it does require some conversations with fellow staff who may be called upon to actually implement some of these recommendations. And that touches a bit on Siranush's question, which is that some items may have a particular budget impact that may have to be borne by an individual department. And they have their own limitations, and the bucket may not be able to accommodate that. So some of those conversations involve staffing and other resources to see if the staff can stretch its capabilities to do those. So I just wanted to outline some of those general highlights for all of you just to be aware of. And one final point. We are making an effort in collaboration with all the members of the staff team, and that is if it does look like there's not a sufficient envelope to be able to grant a request, or because we got feedback from another department that they don't have the staffing or capability to do it, or in other instances we see that the request isn't particularly applicable to the special budget requests, but maybe better handled elsewhere, or in fact ICANN is not the appropriate place to, you know, be the sponsor for that activity, we're making efforts working with Heidi, Sylvia, other members of the team, and we'll make sure that you're alerted to that so that there is time within the overall budget process to make that request. Because there are some very interesting, useful, and fantastic ideas that simply don't fit into this, but should be considered more broadly strategically. And so we're trying to be mindful of that. So you have the opportunity to go to another audience with some of these ideas. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Merci, I think beaucoup. We have a somewhat better perspective on both the budget process and the details for this year. And we look forward to seeing how the special budget request goes through and the comments that are posted on the draft budget.
Merci beaucoup.
Thank you very much. Reçu. For our next session, we have Nora Abusita here. I'm not sure. Do you have other people with you?
I have my colleague Betsy. She's not present, okay. But she's in the room. So I'll
call
right. her if I need to.
Then I'm going to just turn the session over to you.
Great. Thank you. This is probably one of my, don't laugh, but it's one of my favorite activities during ICANN meetings, is to come and talk to this group about what's new at the Development and Public Responsibility Department. One of the reasons why I like to come here is because you're one of the groups that are most informed about what we do, and you are definitely one of the groups that give me feedback that usually translates into changes or new programs or just very good ideas. So I'm not going to spend too much time talking about the department. I think you all know that
Our role is to really develop the tools that can strengthen the community, that can bring more people in, that can help the ones that are already in kind of find their way through this ecosystem. But I will talk about the changes that we've had at DPRD since I saw you last. One area that changed a little bit, not in content, but in leadership, is the online learning platform. As you probably know, Jeff Dunn was left ICANN and accepted a great job with a different organization. And we were sad to see him go, but we were very proud of him to kind of follow what he wanted to do. I was very lucky, however, to find Elizabeth Andrews, who joined my team a few months ago and who is currently running the online learning platform. The change kind of forced me to take another look at our strategy for the platform and to kind of tweak it a little bit. And Elizabeth, we call her Betsy, so I think you can too, is now helping me design a new strategy for the OLP. We're certainly focusing more on relevant local content. We are talking directly to our friends in the different regions, whether they're ICANN employees or community members. We're moving more towards collaborating with academic institutions, so we're talking to the University of Rabat, for example, in order to either import their content or curate their content so that it becomes available on the OLP. So in the next few months, you will see a little bit more, maybe a little bit less English content and more local, relevant local content, which is, I think, where we were lacking the most. One of the things that triggered this for us, and I don't know who's controlling the slides, but if we can go to slide, let me see where it is. Never mind, I don't think it's even in here. We looked at the map of where the OLP was being used the most. And in its origins, the OLP was really designed to deliver information about ICANN and the ecosystem to those who can't come to our meetings or who can't come to us. And unfortunately, what the map showed me was that the biggest users of the online learning platform were still in North America and Europe, which basically showed me that we really didn't go as far as we needed to go. So we're now tackling it from the map itself and seeing where the areas that we have weaknesses and then developing the content that is relevant to those areas. Sometimes it's the subject matter and sometimes it's the language itself. For the languages that we don't cover ourselves at ICANN, so the non-UN languages, we are going to the communities themselves and asking them to help us with it. We have carved out some budget as well for translations wherever we couldn't crowdsource the content. Betsy, did I miss anything about the online learning platform? Again, this is a platform for the community and by the community. So if you have any content that you think would be useful and relevant, please do send it to us. We'd love to make it available in several languages and to all. Another change or another update for our department is something that I had promised to do last time, which is to review the fellowship criteria. It's been a long time coming. And the biggest trigger was, of course, that the criteria that we were using was excluding some people that felt like they needed to be included. So if we can go to slide number 13, please. So I was surprised that we have been using the same criteria for 10 years. I haven't been at ICANN for 10 years, so just a disclaimer. But what we wanted to do was really evaluate how much this criteria has helped us in the success of the program and how much it's excluded people that really should have come through. So we have a timeline. We've already started the work. We're doing a lot of research on what other organizations do, what kind of criteria they follow. We are not very keen on developing our own criteria. That would be a process that nobody would ever agree on. So my personal preference is to kind of take something that's more universally acceptable and perhaps enhance it or tweak it for our context. There are representatives involved in the process. Hopefully, the group is kind of representative of the community as well. If you are interested in getting involved, then please do let me know. We're still in the research phase, as I mentioned, and I'm hoping that by March we will develop a draft report that assesses the weaknesses of the current criteria and starts suggesting ways forward. We will not adopt anything until we talk to the community and make sure that everybody's comfortable with the next phase. We're looking at a lot of things when we look at this. We're looking at whether we've been excluding people unintentionally, obviously, based on geography, gender, ethnic grouping, etc. So please stay involved in this. It's extremely important, and I want to make sure that we get it right this time around. I'm going to stop here because I don't think there's anything else that's new other than... Oh, one more thing. Sorry. Let's go to... Slide number 18, please. One thing that we started doing is we're working with our colleagues in the different regions on the ecosystem around the DNS industry. For example, the Middle East has just produced a report on the industry where they have identified certain factors around DNS that have caused the weakness of our industry itself. So we're currently looking at different ways to strengthen the ecosystem around the DNS. We launched a YouthCom pilot program, which are smaller workshops that help inform and educate young people in their own communities, and hopefully they will become knowledgeable enough about ICANN that they can kind of spread the knowledge. So I'm going to stop here and take questions because I think we're running out of time. Thank you.
Shun, you're first.
Thank you. This is Shun for the transcript record. Thank you for the presentation. So on the e-learning, as one of the individual who actually love open source, I was quite not happy to see that this has moved from being an open source platform to a different platform. Perhaps that is not the case, but I would like to know why, if that is the case. The other thing is you mentioned about about the fact that you're not receiving usage from regions like, for instance, from Africa. I'd like to point out that some of the data you're actually receiving may actually be coming from Africa, in that most ISPs still use the IP address from other regions. So considering that the geolocation will actually be based on the IP address source, there's likelihood that those traffics are from other places. On the last comment, on the review, the fellowship review, I didn't see any stage where there's going to be public comments. Is there any intention to have that, or it's just going to go straight? Thank you.
I'm Betsy Andrews with DPRD ICANN staff, and I can respond about the online learning platform change. We changed to a different operator for three reasons. One is because the current system that we're using allows us to incorporate video a lot more easily. It doesn't have to be a YouTube link. We can embed it. Another reason is budget. And a final reason is that it's more friendly with additional languages. And like Nora mentioned, that's really a big push for us right now. We want people to be able to learn in the language that they're most comfortable with. And I want to be able to help people within the ecosystem generate content in their native languages that other people can use. So those are the three reasons why we moved to the current platform that we have.
And regarding the data, correct me if I'm wrong, Betsy, but I believe the data is based on people who register and who indicate where they currently live. It's not really where the ISP is from, so that's that. As for the fellowship reviews, honestly, we're considering putting the draft report and then the final report for public comment, because again, I want to ensure that we're doing it right this time.
Thank you very much. Sandra, next.
Thank you, Ellen. Sandra speaking. Hello, Nora. Always nice to have you here. Did I get it right that you said you think that I should not develop their own fellowship program criteria, but rather take something which is more broad and universally unacceptable, maybe from another organization? Did I get that right?
Thank you, Sandra. My personal view is, my personal views are just one person's views. I will take the recommendations of the group. I worry a lot about us kind of inventing our own criteria, not taking existing criteria that have been tried and tested as a base, because there's more margin for error. But at the end of the day, if our working group comes back to us and gives a recommendation that, you know, ICANN is so unique, we should develop our own criteria, that's exactly the way we will go with it. But I'd much rather have something to start with and build on rather than start from scratch.
Sandra speaking. I would, from my point of view, recommend that ICANN develops their own criteria for some reasons. We are talking a lot here about outreach, and everybody in the community is in the same opinion that we are a very unique organization, and I think such a unique organization might also need unique criteria for such an important program, because the fellowship program has proved to be the best way to engage new people. And I think it was so far a success story. If it needs to be improved, fine. After 10 years, makes sense. But I would really strongly recommend maybe involving other former fellows in developing those criteria. I know there are lots of fellows which are helping out at ICANN booth, etc. But also speaking for myself, organizing summer schools on internet governance, we do look on this. When we have our criteria, we take into account if somebody was already a fellowship at ICANN, because this makes those person more interesting for us. So actually, I think these criteria for the fellowship program are so important and so unique for ICANN in order to engage people, and it also sends a message to the outside that I would rather go for unique criteria. I do agree, of course, looking what other institutions are doing, how it works, but I can't think of any other organization as ICANN in the world where the multi-stakeholder model is so important. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're over our time. Can we have from staff, when does the coffee break end? We have 30 minutes off, but at half past. Okay. We have four people in the queue. I don't mind staying all the way to the next meeting starts, but the interpreters can't. That's correct. I'm sorry. How long can the interpreters stay with us?
Five
more minutes. We have four. Five more minutes at most. Then let's not take time from my introduction. We have four speakers. We want to allow answers, 1 minute for each speaker, and try to keep it under that if you possibly can. Maureen.
Thank you, Maureen, for the record. Just two things. One about the online learning. One of the things that we've been talking about is the importance of getting the message across without having to spend too much time on the language. We should be trying to incorporate some universal language stuff, which is normally graphics or cartoons or something that can be the language is actually minimal, but the concepts are more easily used to get the message across. The next comment was to do with the fellowship program and, you know, the importance of including people in the panel who actually can advocate on behalf of those developing countries, students who come, you know, participants who come from those areas. And also the fact that there is, you know, like we're putting a lot of emphasis on metrics in regards to, you know, like what, you know, how do we measure the effectiveness of the fellowship program on the communities that these people go back to, and I just sort of like wonder how, you know, what is going to be put in place so that you actually, before people get another chance at a fellowship, that they can actually prove that there's been some input into the community. Thanks.
Do you want to respond at all? No? Ariel, then next.
This is Ariel. For the record, we have a comment from remote participant Retme Citerio. Who is the authority to draft to publish relevant courses within ICANN e-learning platform for the development of language courses other than language? I use the new and old platform. I consider closing the platform. Possibilities are lost.
I didn't quite understand the question, but if the question is who is permitted to create content, the answer is everyone. There's a set of procedures that have to be met. It has to be factual as opposed to opinion. It has to relate to issues addressed within the ICANN community, but anyone's allowed to create a course for free.
Thank you very much, Wafa.
Yes, thank you. We have the opportunity to have this presentation in the morning with your colleague, Lauren, yes? I asked a question for this slide. How did you choose the countries? You have already said that it's the output of some studies, like the Middle East study. But I'm really surprised to see South Africa, one of the countries that have some weakness, because we know in Africa, South Africa is there where domain industry is the most evolved. I don't know how you chose South Africa.
So this was interested parties that came to us with a lot of energy and willing to pilot this for us. If it works, we're going to duplicate it in other areas. What I was referring to for the DNS study, and I gave the Middle East as an example, is other things. So, for example, what we're doing for the Middle East now is we're launching a program to promote the production of local content, relevant local content for the Middle East. We're going to take a look at the DNS study for Latin America, and it could be something completely different for it. I was trying to give an example that we develop smaller projects, we test them out, we see what works, and then we duplicate them as real programs in other places.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Judith, last.
Yes, this is Judith Hallstein for the record. So on the ICANN Learn, I know you have it in different languages, but I also understand that the videos and the others are not live captioned. And are you going to be looking at doing that? Because one of the reasons people don't look at it, they don't think about it, is that they've never thought about it. But in the same way that you would not, we have language support here and you always have interpreters, we should also have live captioning thought of in the same breath.
We completely agree with you, and that is underway. One of the issues that we have is that retroactively going back to existing video and creating translated live captions is very expensive. So there are other ways to approach this, and there are some courses that are already in progress of being revised. So voiceover work with a script is actually a little more cost-effective, and that's a nice way to reach people across different languages.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Nora and Betsy.
Just one last point. Every change that's been done or improvement is because of comments that users have sent us. And so please keep them coming. It's very essential.
Thank you very much. We'll reconvene in 22 minutes sharp. Please be back. Thank you.